genre.
Hello and welcome to Callin' BS, America's favorite new podcast for those who are fleet of mind and fleet of mouth. I am one half of your co-hosts this evening. My name is Brandon Warren. With me, as always, is Scott Tofty.
Hey.
And we'll be discussing anything and everything under the sun, moon, stars. So good to have you with us, friends, lovers, huckleberries. Scott, how you doing tonight?
This is getting really schmaltzy off the bat, man.
Hey, go out with a bang, come in with a whimper.
I think you might have that backwards. You're coming with a bang.
I thought we were keeping this PG-13.
Yeah, okay, listen, PG-13 has changed a lot over the years, which kind of brings us to our topic for the week. So it's our first show. Welcome, everyone. We're on duelinggenre.com. You might recognize me from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Minute. You might recognize me from Geek by Night. My name is Scott Tofty. Brandon, that was a lovely intro.
I appreciate that, Scott.
And this is a show, Callin' BS, where we are going to be talking about things that we want to talk about, mostly.
It's true. It's an open forum for us and the narcissists that we are. So if you enjoy it, subscribe. If you don't, listen to something else. But we're pretty much just going to talk about what we want here. And if you have a problem with that, then...
Change the virtual dial.
There's nothing that I can do about that either. That's the beauty of the whole mess.
So we're going to be coming out every 2 weeks with a new episode. And we're hoping to get some topics that are interesting to you. And one of the first things that we thought of for this show was the concept of being an 80s kid.
It's true.
What is an 80s kid? Who are 80s kids? Are there standard kind of behavioral practices of, quote, 80s kids? And what's the difference between, like, a 90s kid or a millennial kid? Although I technically guess we are millennials.
I would say, by definition, we're millennials, but I don't think there's a hard and fast dichotomy on what categorizes an 80s kid.
I'm not going to lie, man. I don't like being called a millennial. I don't know. It's not necessarily one of my finer points, but I don't have a very positive view of the whole millennial thing.
It's very pejorative. I agree 100%.
And there are people who will disagree with me who say, like, oh, you know, it's no different than saying you're Generation X or you're a baby boomer. But, like, to me, like, millennial has taken on such a negative connotation.
And Scott, you make an excellent point, because the fact of the matter is there is a difference, because there's a stark divide within the millennial generation that I don't think existed in Generation X, Generation Jones, the Greatest Generation, the Baby Boomers et al. I think the change started when kids started getting cell phones in high school. I think that there's still a large sect of our generation, if you want to call them the first generation millennials, so to speak, Millennials version one, where we still had to do things like check out a library book or do research on microfiche or rewind videotape. Remember rewinding videotapes or cassettes for that matter?
You remember that movie that came out? It was the Jack Black movie, Be Kind, Rewind.
Yes, I do.
Like, that's a joke that it's going to go over the heads of an entire generation of kids.
It was one of the most esoteric comedies to come out in the 2000s. It was funny, though. I think it...
Sweeted versions of movies.
Yeah, I think it was in and out of the theaters in 16
no
minutes.
No time.
Back to my point. There's a disconnect in this generation where I feel like people born in the mid to, I would say, the early to late 80s, the entire generation, didn't have cell phones in high school. You know, we still had to call our friend's house when we wanted to talk to them on the phone and, God forbid, speak to their parents. So I think there's a level of respect for protocol, decorum, process, just a lack of instant gratification that I think is missing from the latter half of the millennial generation.
I look at it this way, and there's a lot of ways you can define an 80s kid. Were you born in the 80s, or did you come of age in the 80s? My sister, who was, you know, graduated high school in 1991, would look at me and say, you're not an 80s kid, you missed half the decade. She was, you know, she's born in the 70s, and, you know, she was cutting her teeth in the 80s. She was
she was teething in the 80s.
She was teething. She had a long toddlerhood, okay? But she, you know, she was growing up on 80s music and MTV and all. Like, she was a teenager through all that, you know, the quote good stuff of the 80s.
Sure, you came of age. It makes sense. But my point is that but I think we have more in common with her generation than the generation subsequent to us has in common with us.
Right. We get the best of both worlds, right? Like, yeah, we are lucky in that we're sort of transitional. We get the cell phone. I had a cell phone in high school. You know, I was very tech savvy growing up, more so than a lot of my peers, definitely more so than my
I'm older. Not talking about the 12-pound 80s cell phone.
No, and I agree. But my point that I'm getting at is, just like you were saying, we did have, you know, the rotary phones. We had all the stuff from the 80s that were still prevalent. Like, we still remember all that stuff that kids born 5-6 years later might not get. We kind of were a really narrow window, being born in 1985, yeah, like you and I both were. We were a very narrow window where we got sort of the tail end of you know, 70s and 80s culture washing into, you know, the 90s.
But enough that we still had respect for patience.
Yes. Listen, man, as a middle school teacher, I can vouch that the attention span of the average 12-year-old has gone down just since I've been working.
Right.
I started teaching in 2007, and I can tell you, man, I don't know if it's a difference between the locations I teach, you know, taught 10 years ago and where I teach now, or whether it's just the cultural habits of the kids, but there's a huge difference in the attention span of your average middle schooler these days. I tend to equate that usually more towards the inability to learn how to entertain oneself without a screen. I think that's a huge factor.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. And I think social media and instant gratification have a lot to do with that. We could entertain ourselves as kids with virtually anything. Yeah, video games were a nice bonus when they came along, but we didn't need them to get by. And I'm with you with the lack of attention span. I don't teach per se, but I work in management at a large healthcare facility. And among the new hires that I find to be like, you know, 10 years, 11 years younger than I am, they're shocked when they find out when they get here that they actually have to do work. But
yeah, I mean, the word entitlement comes up a lot, and I'm not trying to dump. I don't want to dump on, you know, people younger than me and the generation after us, because
I think we're dumping. It's just making an observation.
Yeah, but it's totally different, man. For the sake of playing devil's advocate, we don't live in that virtual world. There is a whole way to be as a kid now. And I'm talking like younger kids, like, again, middle school and down. There's a whole way to socialize. There's a whole social hierarchy that we are completely unfamiliar with. The rules are totally different than what we came up with. And it's easy to look at that and say, like, oh, man, that's not the way it should be, or that's wrong. And it's definitely unfamiliar. And I think there are some serious negative consequences for it.
Well, that's why I added the caveat, and you mentioned it earlier, that every generation tends to blame the generation before.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike and the Mechanics. They might come up later. But my point was that there's a disconnect and a divide within this particular generation that's very apparent to predecessors,
so to speak. Let's just for, you know, shits and giggles, what do you think is like the cutoff for being considered an 80s kid? Like, blanket term 80s kid, what does that mean?
I think you have to have zero connection to the decade. So born later than December 31st, 1989.
So you can't be born in 1990, and there's no way that you're calling that an 80s kid. But
no.
A kid born in 89 is still an 80s kid to you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to have zero connection to the decade. For instance, like, I was 5 years old when the 80s ended, but I still relate heavily to the decade. It's pop culture, it's nuance, it's flavor, it's genre of, you know, various, the entire gestalt of the decade, I feel like I can relate to pretty heavily, despite only actually experiencing 5 years of it with an underdeveloped brain.
So, someone born in 1979.
I would consider them an 80s
kid.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Because they lived through the decade.
All right.
Someone born in 1990 will have experienced none of the 80s.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right, cool. So we got pretty heavy right out of the gate. So let's do what we came here to do, and that's talk about the 80s.
All right, man. So we've established what 80s kid is. Let's get into it, man. Growing up 80s, what are some quintessential things about growing up 80s? Like, for me, I look back and the first thing is just that. I can look back at things. I look back at tangible photos, right?
Yep.
I have a photo album. That album is dated itself, right? Whatever my mom decided to stick those photos into, It's the decor of the time, right? The photos are faded. They are tangible. They have a certain sort of look. They might be Polaroid. You know, there is a certain way that
the 80s personification
looks in my memory because of the filter that the photography, you know, is put through, strained through, that my memory goes through, you know? So, tangible photos. Can't be an 80s kid if you don't have hard photos of yourself.
Right.
Doing stupid stuff and looking goofy.
Your existence cannot be put into question by wiping out an entire hard drive.
Yeah, you have to burn your house down.
Right. Not advising you do so.
Yeah, we do not
condone. Burn Scott's house down.
Yeah, man. So the photos and then the fashion. And I'm not talking like...
The excess.
The excess. Okay. Yeah. Let's pick one. Excess or fashion or the excess of fashion.
I think with the 80s, they go hand in hand.
Elaborate.
Well, look at the way people dress. You've got the flock of seagulls haircut, some other accoutrement of the 80s. You've got the sleeves on the blazer rolled up, made famous by
Don
Jones.
Let's make it personal, though. We were, you know, 5 years old by the time the 80s ended. Your 80s fashion was...
Dinosaur pajamas and Chuck Taylors.
Right? Ninja Turtle t-shirts, okay? Right. Like, there's a certain, like... fashion just for the average run-of-the-mill five-year-old. How many
Star
pictures
Wars
of yourself?
On everything.
How many pictures? Yeah. How many pictures of yourself do you have where you're wearing shorts that are basically underwear? Like they're so.
Oh,
high.
The dolphin shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's like what you went to school in was like shorts.
And that's
your
what
nuts.
They wore in the NBA. You one ball falling out of the side.
And socks pulled up to your knees.
Yeah, with the stripes.
And everything was like purple or yellow or orange. Bugle Boy.
Bugle Boy.
I had a t-shirt that had a hood on it. Why the hell do you need a t-shirt with a hood on it?
Or a t-shirt with the turtleneck thing. Or is that...
Yeah.
You remember those?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
What's
terrible.
The point of that?
It just keeps your neck warm.
You keep your neck warm, but your arms are too hot.
Oh, man. Oh, what about, like, you remember snowsuits?
Yeah.
And as a kid, like, the terrible, like, they were either, like, black or, like, navy blue... with like one yellow stripe
down the
side. You
know, the worst thing about snowsuits was that no one could ever engineer a way for the snow to not just infiltrate the entire body of the suit via the cuff and the sleeve. Because without fail, you could be strapped down in that snowsuit and go take 2 seconds outside and all of a sudden the thing is full of snow just by coming in through the sleeves.
So wait, were you a gloves over the sleeve guy or did you put the gloves on first and then wiggle your arm through the sleeve of the...
It wouldn't matter. The snow would still find a
Same
way
thing with
in.
The boots?
I experimented with a multitude of glove insertions.
Glove Insertion would be an excellent band name.
But we're calling the show Glove Insertion from now on.
So, yeah. What kinds of crazy stuff did we do when we were kids outside? Like, I remember we had a porch. It was so outside of our kitchen, we had a shed off the back of our house. So, like, you could go out the kitchen window and you're on the roof of the shed. It was attached mm-hmm. to the house. It was maybe 9 feet high, right? So, in the winter, and I remember, like, blizzard in 93, we had several feet of snow in upstate New York. So, we would go into the backyard and pile up snow all around the shed. And we'd climb onto the shed and we would take a running leap off of the roof of the shed into snowbanks. My mother encouraged this. It was awesome. Hey, why don't we go jump off the shed today?
Nice. So instead of snow angels, you were making like snow craters off the roof.
Yeah, snow impact craters. What about you, man? What's your typical winter look like in the 90s, 80s as a youth?
Well, my grandparents lived in northern Pennsylvania, which got a lot of snow. And my dad was always very adept at making paths for the sleds. Like jetting down some of those hills, he would create like banks and whatnot that we could go and careen about. But again, it always came down to calling it quits early because the damn snow got too far into the snowsuit. I cannot stress this enough that at that time, the technology had not advanced to the point of wearing the gloves over the snowsuit.
Are kids still alive? Like, do they still have the toboggans with like the metal, what do you call them? Sled skids, like the metal.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the terminology. We'll have one of our callers look that up for us.
Like, I remember that my godfather had one of those, and I like now, dude, they were like sharp. Like, You take an old-fashioned wooden toboggan with, like, the metal, whatever the hell they're called on them.
You could use those as a weapon to behead your enemies.
Totally okay, though.
Yeah, well, it was the 80s. Everybody was doing crazy stuff.
So, like, we were just allowed to do stupider shit, right?
Oh, yeah, we were allowed to be as reckless as possible. They didn't care.
I lived in a pretty, you know, safe residential upstate New York neighborhood. So, like, it was one of those things where we were forced outside.
Yes.
And then our parents wouldn't see us until dinner time. And it's basically like, the sun starts coming down, come home.
Yeah. That was pretty much the rule. That was once the sun started to set, you went home. Or if you had one of those parents that could do the, you know, that really loud, obnoxious whistle with the two fingers in the mouth.
The slobber whistle?
Yeah. I was never able to do that.
Yeah, I would just hop on my bike and it would be around the block. It would be across several streets to go to friend's house. I would ride my bike miles away as a child.
Yeah, like, so would I.
It was totally fine. And I granted, again, it probably has a lot to do with where I grew up in suburbia. I lived in like freaking Kevin Arnold Wonder Years utopia.
So I mean, I didn't live in as aggressively a suburban neighborhood as Scott did. I lived in like a lower middle class neighborhood in Elmira, New York, which is even lower middle class now. But
About sledding down.
I mean, yeah. We would play street hockey all the time in a street that really was quite busy. But you know, your parents didn't care. You know, they trusted you, and I think that element of trust is maybe what's missing today. But then again, I don't think the trust is solicited today as it was then.
I almost wonder if it's more trust or if it's more that people are more scared.
Like, well, I feel like more fear. Absolutely.
I'm terrified for kids these days. And I don't even know why. There's a big struggle inside of me going like, Jesus Christ, let the kids do the thing. Let them get hurt. Let them learn. And then there's also this huge, like, super overprotective, like, don't slip on the step. You might bruise your ankle. Like, who the hell cares in the long run? Like, kids are bouncy. They're fine. Like, let a kid make a mistake. But there is just this, like, hovering, helicoptery overprotectiveness that I think a lot of people are our age that are raising kids now. Are probably struggling.
Well, do you remember like the cheapy swing sets that you'd buy at like 84 Lumber or, you know, what?
That like came out of the ground?
Yeah, that your parents were too lazy to actually cement into the ground. We would regularly go as high as possible on those with the hopes that the thing would fall over. Not giving any credence to what might happen to us or what bones may become obliterated. And during that process, we just wanted to see if we could make it happen. But is that danger streak, that adrenaline junkie gene being bred out of children today?
I think it might be. And again, I you know, supervise kids at a park, and of course it's my job to not let them get hurt. So that
it's also a hobby
to do with
of
it.
Yours.
Yeah. Well, when I'm getting paid for it, at least I'm a lot more concerned. Like with my nieces and nephews, I also get very worked up. But the kids that I'm overseeing. Working, like I get super overprotective when if I have to take them to the playground for anything. Like I
so
get scared when they sit on the swing.
You don't just encourage them to throw rocks at each other, right? Because that's another thing we used to do.
We used to throw a lot of crap at each other.
We would just throw rocks at each other and laugh. Like if you got a hit in the knee, if you got busted open, you'd shake it off, and then you just try to nail the guy that hit you with the rock.
Do you think a kid would even get? The phrase "walk it off" anymore?
No, rub some dirt on it.
Like,
walk it off,
playing
man.
Little
up.
League, and you like take a line drive to the sack, and you're just like, "Bah, walk it off."
Or you have a particularly egregious collision at home plate. Yeah, just stand up, shake it off. So, buddy,
did you ever have? I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, but did you ever have like the super snotty crying? Like I'm at a baseball game, and like I hurt myself, and you're just blubbering as a kid, and your coach is just like, "Okay." Get it together in the dugout because you're getting back on the field in 5 minutes.
Never happened to me, but truth be told, I didn't play Little League. But in school, even still when I got hurt, you know, you just get up and you dust yourself off. I remember my buddy Tim, you know Tim Burke, so he was playing first base and another friend of mine was playing catcher and someone hit an infield pop-up while we were playing softball one day. And both of them were running towards the ball and not looking at each other. when the ball came down, they were still looking at the ball, not looking at each other, and smashed into each other running full speed. Tim ended up biting through his lower lip, and the other kid, Brian, ended up tearing his meniscus.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm pretty sure that they were out there playing the next day, torn meniscus and all.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a bit of an overstatement, but you see what I'm trying to say.
Back in my day, we used to pierce our lip with our teeth and rip tendons, and it was never a big deal.
As an 80s stalwart, Dana Carvey once said, that's the way it was, and we liked
it. We liked it! We loved it! Oh, man. All right, so I think we agree that there was a little bit more freedom for us as kids in the 80s. We had a little bit more ability to self-govern.
Autonomy.
Yeah, and we had to also deal with our own consequences, which I think is another...
And I think that comes down to the whole having respect for patience thing. Because oftentimes, to be able to go out to play, you had to do something around the house. Like, oh, you got to mow the lawn, or else you're not going to be able to go out and play stickball. Or you're not going to be able to go out and play...
Did you ever play stickball?
I'm on a roll here.
Has anyone ever played stickball?
Scott, I'm on a roll here. Got to wash, you know, and do the dishes. You know, before they had dishwashers, actually had to do the dishes. How arcane. But
the dishes are done, man.
That movie came out in the 90s.
I know. All right, speaking of movies, that's a good time to get... Like, we agree on that. You know, kids today, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
I think
it's
we're
true.
On the same page.
No respect.
What are some of the... Like, let's talk media. What are some of the favorite things you remember as far as, like, media... TV, movies, games. Like, there's a lot of great stuff that came out in the 80s and the 90s. Like, some of our most favorite things ever came out in that.
The game Guess Who.
Oh, my God. How many
is
hours?
It, are you allowed to still play that game?
Like, so, I actually, the last time I played Guess Who was...
Isn't asking that question, like, you know, considered judgment? Like, you couldn't ask any of those questions during a job interview.
Jesus no. Christ, can you imagine? Well, especially if we had the version... it couldn't have been the first
is
version of the game.
Is your character Muslim?
Like, I don't know when that game came. Jesus Christ. But... Oh, man. Yeah, because it was all racially based when we were kids, right? It was like...
there are two guys with glasses.
It was
what
your
else
hair
are you gonna
color.
Ask?
It was the hats you were wearing. It was your skin color. It was the shape of your face. You know, your gender.
Yeah, and there were usually two women. Now there's probably 50...
I
probably
would imagine
25
it's at least
50%
women
men.
On the game now.
Well, now they've got to go 33% transgendered as
that's
well.
That's true. We
but
gotta,
you can ask if they're transgendered because how can you tell?
I feel like that's probably a very problematic game these days.
That's my point.
Yeah.
That's why I brought it up. Because remember how fun that game was? You flip it over all
you know
the
what they do
delightfully
have,
little patter of the game
they
pieces.
They have themed versions. So they'll have, I think they have like, you know, TV show based Guess Who with like SpongeBob Guess Who or like things like that where now it's, you know,
is your
more...
character SpongeBob? Yes.
Does your character live in a sandcastle under the sea?
I think he lives in a pineapple.
Whatever,
but you know what? That's
show.
Why we're
I
children
hate
of the
SpongeBob.
We're children of the 80s, not
I'm
the early say 2000s.
It. Give me Ren and Stimpy any day.
Rocco, modern Rocco.
All right, let's talk Nicktoons.
Modern life.
Let's talk Nicktoons, man. How good was Rocco?
I liked Rocco's Modern Life because Rocco's Modern Life, like the Muppet Show, wasn't afraid to give the straight bull to the kids.
Dude, he worked at a phone sex line.
Yeah.
Like, blatantly worked at a phone
he
sex line.
He watched a horror movie called Night of the Shaved Kittens. This was a kids show.
His best friend was named Heifer, right?
That's true.
Which, Heifer was a girl?
Heifer was a...
Right? Because it was... Cow, no. Not a bull.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Well, he didn't have breasts. Or an udder.
True. So, Heifer was
and Philbert
one
was...
of the 33%?
There you go. Is your character Heifer? Yes, good show.
But, like, the Nicktoons were super edgy, man. Even, like...
One of the 33%. Oh, God. We're going to elicit marches down the three street. Street. We are the 33%. But anyway, back to Rocco before we alienate too much of our
This is
burgeoning.
As good a time as any for a disclaimer. We have no hard feelings towards anybody.
Anybody.
But it's just commentary. Call us out on it. We're all friends here.
That's true. Except Scott and I. We really don't care for each other.
Well, you know, we'll get to that later.
We're like the Everly Brothers, the Proclaimers. When the red light's on, we work together, and then we go our separate ways.
But yeah, the Nicktoons are super edgy. You look at shows like Ren and Stimpy. right?
Yeah.
Rocko's Modern Life. Even the animation style of like Rugrats was, for lack of a better term, it was super sketchy, right? Like it was rough animation. It wasn't this like super sleek animation style. It was kind of, the music was done by Mark Mothersbaugh.
He also did the music for Pee-wee's Playhouse,
which was really odd music for a kids show.
Yeah.
And it was subversive when you think about it. This whole show is about babies kind of sticking it to their parents.
Oh, Rugrats was a very edgy show.
It's like the R-rated version of Muppet Babies.
And Rugrats also, one of my favorite things in art or any type of medium, anything with dialogue, is the lack of need to explain a joke to your audience.
Yeah, don't assume your audience is stupid.
Right, and that's one thing that Rugrats did very well. For instance, there was the a running gag in the show would be that the babies would always mispronounce something that they heard. And for instance, the Sasquatch became Satchmo. And every time Angelica or the babies would run in screaming, saying the Satchmo was going to get him, one of the adults Jesus. Would say, the trumpet player? No, the monster. So that line was repeated throughout the show, like, oh, the Satchmo is coming. The trumpet player? No, the monster. But they never explained to you who the Satchmo was. And I liked that.
But we grew up not knowing that originally. But then as we get older, like, we learn it. And like that. There's a whole other level.
And the visual it created of Louis Armstrong actually trying to kill
My Louis Armstrong is just Fat Albert. I was going to say,
Louis Armstrong trying to kill a group of babies is surreally hilarious.
You know, so Rocko's Modern Life, Ren and Stimpy, Rugrats, even Hey Arnold was great.
Yeah.
Then he had shows like All That, which is SNL for kids.
There was a girl doing a Ross Perot impersonation on All That. Can you imagine somebody doing a topical political impersonation on a Nickelodeon show now?
No.
Because kids don't care about that.
No, because, listen, as someone who, in my master's degree program, I apologize for the pretentiousness, one of the classes that I took was TV and its effect on kids. Right?
Yeah.
And one of the assignments was sit down and watch a Saturday morning cartoon. And for the love of me, I cannot remember what show I watched, but there was no plot. It was 22 minutes long, and it was nothing but reoccurring colors. Like, nothing was happening. It was just stimulation, dialogue continually happening, no chance for anything to land, no sense of humor, no semblance of plot. It was just cotton candy.
No credit for the audience.
No, not at all. It was just sounds and lights to keep a kid entertained, which to me is sad because I feel like we got really substantive entertainment as kids. Like, not all of it. Because you go back and you watch some of this shit now. Like, you go back and you watch the original Ninja Turtles and maybe the first five are good. And then it sort of devolves
into
that
episode
weirdness.
With Emperor Alistair was pretty sweet. You know, when April O'Neil was a doppelganger for his daughter.
Yeah, yeah. She was the princess or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He totally banged her.
And then, like, G.I. Joe, things like it's not all great, Joe. But at least it
David
had, like,
and the Gnomes.
It was, dude, David and the Gnome ruled.
Wasn't that
I
Tom
loved
Bosley?
David and the Gnome. It was Tom Bosley.
Yeah, Tom Bosley's the chief.
You cannot put Howard Cunningham in a show and have it be anything less than stellar.
That's true.
I cried when that man died. He was like, you know, my TV adopted father.
My father-in-law is a spitting image of him. It's one of the reasons I love him. He's a great man.
But I feel like we just got such rich entertainment when we were kids. Like,
we did.
1992, the Batman animated series comes out.
Yeah, that was good.
That's still the best version of Batman that's ever been on screen.
The Beetlejuice cartoon.
Yup.
Can you imagine just kind of a fly-by-night, indie, macabre, dark comedy, begetting us a cartoon that has that much mileage now.
What would be the equivalent of Beetlejuice now? Like, the movie.
The
like,
movie Beetlejuice? Yeah.
What's like, today's equivalent of the movie Beetlejuice?
Saw? I don't know.
Can you imagine a...
A Saw cartoon?
Okay, not quite. That would be pretty awful. Like a Saturday morning Saw cartoon.
Let's just run with Saw because I think it's a hilarious concept.
So Jigsaw is like the good guy in the cartoon, right?
And he hangs out with all of his murderer friends in, like, some fantasy land, and, you know, they make jokes.
His playhouse, like, that has all the trap doors and stuff, that's just where they live, right? It's like their Pee-wee's playhouse.
Yeah, it's like Pee-wee's playhouse, and, you know, at the end of every episode, he flies off in his little tricycle thing, like Pee-wee did.
And everyone's okay at the end. Yeah. No one dies in the
Saw
cartoon
show. Well, people can die
in
the episode, but they would regenerate in the following week.
Right. God, that's terrifying.
But it'd be funny.
But it would be great. But there's not, like, that's true. Like, how many of those sort of weird movies or TV shows, like, we absorbed as kids, right? We maybe didn't get all of the levels.
Oh, that's the most important thing, is that ability for retention. I think everything that we look back on with nostalgia now, whether or not it holds up, the fact that we can remember it as well as we can speaks to the long-term mileage and longevity, you know, shelf life of these various.
You're getting something mediums. New every time you watch it, even today.
Yeah,
it does. If there's any, pick a movie from
the 80s. It's because we keep going circling back to this original point, because they actually put stock into the writing of these shows. You watch a Saturday morning cartoon now, it's all flashy colors and a lot of fast motion to keep the kids' attention, because they're not going to pay attention to dialogue. Those shows in the late 80s, early 90s were very dialogue driven, and you can't do something like that now because no one's going to pay attention to
it. You know what? I always look at it this way, like with the Muppets, right? I grew up and I loved the Muppet Show, even though it was, you know, off the air by the time I was born. It was always showing on reruns, right? And now I have the DVD, so I'm still watching it constantly. It was a great show, but it was all rooted in, like, vaudeville.
Yeah.
And there's something that happens in the early 90s, is sort of where I peg it, where the vaudeville comedy sort of styling goes away. Even Monty Python draws from that a little bit. SNL, definitely.
Oh, sure.
The idea of a song and dance man. Like, look at Animaniacs. Remember Animaniacs, right? Yeah.
Animaniacs was a great show.
But it's all vaudeville humor. It's all, like, Catskills comedian humor, right? Yeah. Look what I found. Finger prints? I don't think so, right? There's so many levels and so many of those jokes.
And it was smart, too. That's the thing. Like, they didn't talk down to the audience. They basically said, no, trust us. The audience is going to get this joke.
And the audience was 7-year-olds.
It's true.
And I go back, they put it on Netflix recently, I go back and watch it now, and you're like, holy shit, there's, like, a lot more in there for us. It's the same thing that Pixar is doing now with their movies. They made a smart decision. DreamWorks did it with Shrek. A lot of these animated movies are doing the same thing now that our shows did when we were kids. They're giving something for the kids. There's a surface level that it's like, oh my god, this is a movie about an ogre who finds a princess, yay. But then there's, like, this whole second level of adult humor for the parents that are taking their kids.
Right.
Like, it's the reason why these movies are doing gangbusters at the box office, is because it's still fun as a 30-year-old person to go watch them. There's
In the first Toy Story, they had Don Rickles, rest his soul, working his famous line, what are you looking at, you hockey puck? Like, that's going to land with any child that you know in 1995.
Because he's looking at a hockey puck.
But then they pan over and there's a hockey puck in the toy box. But it's brilliant because they don't consider whether or not the audience is going to get it. They just give the audience enough credit to try it.
Yeah. I think we were in a golden era. Let's shift gears again. A little bit of music?
Sure.
All right. 80s, 90s music. We had a lot going on. So from the year we were born, 85, right? We are in the midst of new wave. We are, there's a little bit of punk rock going
on. Punk's kind of on the back
end. Hair metal's coming up strong and hard, right? We're almost, some of the grunge bands are
we've got a foot on the bottom rung of grunge, I think, because the Pixies had started right around that time.
And we also have bands from years and years ago still going, like the Beach Boys getting popular again. Queen is huge. You know, McCartney is doing stuff with Wings and solo.
Michael Jackson's still going strong.
There's this whole MTV.
Stevie Wonder.
Thing. Yeah, so there's a ton of great music coming out of the 80s.
There's also a ton of filler coming out of the 80s.
Absolutely.
I would say most one-hit wonder bands per capita of any decade.
Yeah, and why do you think that is? Why do you think that the 80s were so littered with, like, one-off bands?
And I think it harkens back to my original point. It was a generation, a decade of excess. It was just cranking out as much as possible to just see if anything would stick.
So in the 60s and 70s, there was sort of this history lesson, ready? 60s and 70s, the singer-songwriter becomes a valued commodity, right?
Right.
Music starts getting taken really seriously. Rock and roll starts getting taken really seriously, as it has been the devil's music for like a decade.
Well, following
up to this point, right?
I think following the advent of the, you know, the Tin Pan Alley songwriters in New York City, you had groups like the Beatles and Buddy Holly and the Crickets that came along that wrote their own material, and it was good.
Right, and then they're starting to be revered by the music establishment, by America as a whole. All of a sudden, like, by the time Elvis goes into the army, like, rock and roll was like a legit thing.
Right. Was not a novelty anymore.
It's here to stay, is the
to
phrase
quote
that was
Danny and the
around.
Juniors.
Yeah. So as rock and roll and this, you know, Motown and things like that are starting to be taken seriously, now we have people going, oh my God, we're gonna make some serious money off of this. The 60s, we get hippies, you get Woodstock, singer-songwriter, boom,
psychedelia.
Political music, psychedelia. 70s, all of that grows and shifts. We get a little bit more harder edge stuff. We get big stadium rock. You get prog rock.
Disco, yacht rock,
disco,
punk rock.
Yacht rock. This is where the record companies start going, okay, so now I've noticed that if I go, I can put anything over that and sell it. It starts to be broken down into a formula, I think, in the 70s and going into the 80s, which is why I think so much 80s music, it, like, the popular stuff is like one hit wonders.
Well, I think 80s, I think production of 80s music and production of 80s automobiles are commensurate with each other.
I can't wait to hear this.
In that they became insanely cheap to make in both counts. So we just started cranking them out one after another. The quality didn't matter. Look at some of the formerly great pony cars that, like, Ford and General Motors and Chrysler would crank out from the 50s to the 60s. The Mustang, the Camaro, the Corvette. They all looked like shit in the 80s, but they were incredibly...
The Corvette was awful in the 80s.
The Mustang was a piece of garbage. But because the Japanese were breathing down our necks, it became imperative to start mass-producing automobiles. So these formerly great bastions of motor superiority just became fiberglass shitboxes that probably couldn't break 48 miles an hour.
Fiberglass shitbox is my next band name that I'm writing down.
But
yeah,
I would
but the
say
technology
that,
grows and it makes it so much easier, right? So the 80s, we get the advent of, you know, very early computer recording, which one of our favorite bands, the Beach Boys, were in at the very beginning of.
Right.
They were using Pro Tools, you know, almost before a lot of other industry people were. Pro Tools is the computer recording software.
We're using it right now.
Yes. But yeah, that technology boon makes it just so much easier for everyone and cheaper.
So
and not
just,
only that, you have cassette tapes all of a sudden. CDs are coming out. We have more FM radio.
Yeah.
In the 70s is a huge deal, right?
The
MTV.
The overhead went down. The cost of production went down.
And let's go to MTV. Now your song doesn't necessarily matter as much as how you look singing it.
It's true.
So I feel like the other thing is if you have a group that looks really great or a singer or a, you know, whatever that looks awesome, has a great visual style.
Well, it looked really great in the 80s. Yes.
Yes. Contextually speaking, now put that sumbitch on TV and you've got a hit. Doesn't matter what they sound like. This is starting to sound eerily familiar.
Clive Owen over here. Wait a minute. That's not right.
Clive Davis.
Clive Davis.
Everyone knows Clive Owen, the head of Arista Records.
Yeah. He moonlights.
Yes. But yeah, and not that the one-hit wonders are bad songs. A lot of them are terrible, but a lot of them are also really good. You start getting the second British invasion, a new wave music coming in through the 80s. You get rap that's becoming huge in the 80s. And I love early hip-hop, man.
Yeah,
I'm not
great.
A big rap guy. But when you take the, you know, the pioneers of hip hop, and you start talking Grandmaster Flash, you start talking Run DMC and stuff like
that. Sugar Hill Gang, Naughty by Nature,
yeah, NWA, Public Enemy, guys like that's great music.
It is.
You know, it's got great production. It's innovative. It's melodic.
It's pretty innocuous, too. It's not really, and this is well before everybody went crazy. People aren't even sampling anymore. It's getting to the point now where they're just stealing someone else's song.
Straight up, yeah.
But, you know, like they said on Saturday Night Live, this is when we used to rap about good things like sneakers and not petting strange dogs.
Well, listen, we could do a whole show on the me culture of hip hop now, but let's not.
I'm just saying. Well, but back to the culture of excess with music. Music became insanely easy to produce. It became insanely cheap to market. And, you know, with the new mediums and modalities like your cassette tapes, 45 records were still selling. You've got the CDs coming out now, which you could charge more for despite not being that expensive to produce.
Yeah, seriously. And you could spend, $700 for a CD player?
Sometimes up to a grand.
The Wedding Singer is a great illustration of sort of the 80s.
It's a great snapshot.
Yeah. It's a pastiche, but it's a really good, like...
It's interesting that they would do a period piece in 1998. About 1985.
Yeah. That's like doing a period piece now about the year 2000.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Very strange.
That makes me feel really old.
2004.
Yeah.
That's like, can you imagine us doing Britney a movie about 2004?
Didn't they just do a Britney Spears like biopic on Lifetime that tanked terribly?
I didn't catch that. I was holding out for From Justin to Kelly 2, Electric Boogaloo. So we were talking about music. So you got Men Without Hats. You got Soft Cell. You got Tears for Fears. You got the Thompson Twins. Then you got your better bands like Huey Lewis and the News, Elvis Costello and the Attractions, The Cure.
Oh my God, The Cure. That's a band who I totally missed out on growing up, but that I have been getting into heavy lately.
Yeah, good
and
stuff.
And that, again, it's stuff just like the TV shows that we used to watch. You go back and you listen to some of this, you know, music that was recorded in the 80s using, even like with the big echoey snare drum sounds and the electronic keyboards of the time, the synthesizers, like... some reason this stuff, the good stuff, doesn't sound dated. Like The Cure doesn't sound dated.
I think Toto's Africa might be the most 80s sounding song of all time. Still doesn't sound dated. I think it's one of the greatest songs ever written.
And it's all live players too. That's the funny thing about Africa. Like that song is just like the best.
They're all session players.
They're the guys that played on Michael Jackson's Thriller. A lot of those guys that played in Toto were session musicians for other... Yeah, and hell, I think Michael Jackson sang on a Toto song background somewhere.
Possibly. Was it during The Wiz?
I just want to laugh
That's
when
a
you
joke.
Say that.
Michael Jackson, man.
Yes. Michael Jackson was huge in the 80s.
He's dead.
My favorite of all time. He is super dead.
But you know what? That only improves his legend.
That's true.
His blackness grew exponentially.
Yeah. Nothing vindicated me more being a kid growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, being teased for liking Michael Jackson. My whole life. Like, part of my lower elementary, middle school identity is, like, I was the guy who liked Michael Jackson, and that was weird. He died, and all of a sudden, like, I was a cool kid.
At least you weren't the kid that Michael Jackson liked.
True.
It would have ended much badly for much worse
much
for
badly.
It would have ended much badly. It would have ended much worse for you, Scott.
What are some other huge things that happened when we were kids, man? Columbia. Was that when that was 83?
Are you talking about the country or the record label?
Or is it Challenger was the space shuttle that blew up?
Challenger,
not
86.
86. That is okay.
That was brutal. That was the faulty O-ring because they had not tested the settings and cold weather for the launch.
Yeah. And you know, we lost John Lennon in 1980, right? Which had no bearing on me until I was in high school and realized how much I loved John Lennon. And more specifically the Beatles, because I have feelings about John Lennon that you are aware of that he was not my favorite Beatle, but the fact that like Jesus, why did that guy have to go?
Yeah, but I think Chapman might be the best thing that could have happened to John Lennon's legacy.
Possibly.
I mean, look at the direction the 80s were going in terms of the quality of a lot of music, and look at the direction that the quality of John Lennon's music was heading towards.
Yeah, that's true. And again, I was never a fan of Lennon's solo stuff, but it's one of those things where, like, as I was discovering the Beatles in, like, my middle school years... and getting really heavy into them in high school and college, it was feeling a sense of loss, like all these guys are here except that one,
right,
because of some idiot psychopath.
Not to speak in reductive terms about John Lennon or his legacy, I'm just saying I feel like, you know,
no,
well,
I mean, well, that
if Hendrix was around to ruin his reputation, or Janis Joplin, or any,
well,
of,
I know
the,
how,
like,
you feel about Kurt Cobain, but it's the same thing. Like, if that dude had lived into the 2000s, you don't love Nirvana.
That's true.
Yeah, you think that he's a little overrated as, yes, as a mythological figure in music culture,
as a songwriter, as a singer. Yes.
Yeah. Had he not committed suicide, his legacy wouldn't be what it is. Nirvana wouldn't be what it is in the pop culture pantheon,
right,
now. I'm not saying that these guys should have died, but, like, it definitely, you know, someone dies and their resale value goes up.
It's true. Look, you, at, look at,
look at the entirety of the year 2016.
Yeah, look at Dennis Wilson.
Yeah, look at Dennis Wilson. The one album that he put out that got big after he died, right?
Hey, it was good.
If every word you say... Yeah, listen, Dennis Wilson dying is the best thing that ever happened to John Stamos' career, too.
It's true. I got to come up with a new catchphrase.
All right, man, lightning round time. Let's, yeah, do this. We're going to go lightning round down through a few items. And this, you, right off the top of your head, ready? I'm going to go down the list for you, and then you can do the same for me, okay?
All right.
Here we go. Favorite TV show.
Of the 80s?
Of the 80s. Of your childhood.
Early 80s?
80s to early 90s.
But not the early 80s.
But not, let's say, from when you were born.
I think we're turning this into the inclement weather round.
It's cloudy with a chance of rain.
Cloudy with a chance of answers.
All right.
All right. Favorite TV show.
Your favorite TV show when you were a kid.
Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Okay. Favorite movie.
From the 80s. Off the top of my head, The Goonies.
Nice. Okay. Favorite band or artist or album.
From the 80s, Bobby McFerrin.
Really?
Well, I'm just going off the top of my,
okay,
head.
Okay.
I listened to the hell out of Don't Worry, Be
All
Happy.
Right, man. This is right
Best
in your wheelhouse.
Best vocal bass line I've ever heard.
Yeah. Favorite athlete?
Mike Schmidt.
Who the hell's Mike Schmidt?
Are you kidding me?
Dude, you know me in sports. Come on.
All right. History lesson.
Time out on the lightning round. Give me the history.
Greatest third baseman of all time. In the majors, possibly, maybe only the National League. Played third base for the Phillies multiple time, MVP. Won the 1980 World Series with the Philadelphia Phillies. I also might go favorite athlete of the 80s with Pete Rose. All-time hits leader in Major League Baseball, currently banned from the Hall of Fame. But I would say one of the two, but probably Schmidt, just because he embodies the Philadelphia Phillies.
By the way, pro wrestlers can totally count as athletes.
Yeah, sure.
I just want to see if that changed an answer for you. Okay. Most Jesus Christ,
most
Tofty.
Most
memorable moment of the decade.
Once we start drinking when we do this, I think our diction will improve.
Yes, they sure... Oh, diction. Sorry.
Most memorable moment of the decade. I could go with either when Reagan was shot, or WrestleMania 1, or The Brave Little Toaster on VHS.
I used to rent that from my local library. Not even Blockbuster, like the library had a copy.
Nice.
All right, your turn. My turn. All right, here we go. Favorite TV show? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Favorite movie?
Of the Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. Favorite band, artist, album?
So artist has to be Michael Jackson. Favorite band of the 80s, Huey Lewis and the News.
I didn't interject. I would say my favorite album is probably The Proclaimers' Sunshine on Leith. Despite popular belief, it did not come out in the 90s. The single,
I always forget that,
500 Miles, I'm Gonna Be, came out in 1993 in the States because it was used in the movie Benny and June, but the album itself was released in the UK in 1988.
There's going to be a test on this, ladies and gentlemen.
And if I had to go with, what'd I say, favorite artist? Well, I'll stick with Bobby McFerrin, but that's what I'm going with for album.
Man,
all right, Scott, favorite
hang on, let me do favorite album real quick. I got to think about that. Favorite album of the 80s.
I also had Michael Jackson's Bad on cassette.
You know, I was just going to say that. Bad. I had that on... Jesus, how did I have... Well, okay, so quick side story. You got one, I get one. The song that I first remember hearing in my entire life is Bad by Michael Jackson. And I have a memory, and I don't know why I have this particular memory. It might be because I saw a photo and I'm tying it to the memory, but I used to walk around singing that song, and I have one memory of being in a motorcycle helmet, like my godfather's motorcycle helmet, singing I'm Bad at the top of my lungs. I was also
in church.
I interrupted my sister's good friend's wedding. The wedding band was playing this song, and I got on stage and started singing it with the wedding band.
In the motorcycle helmet?
No, that was in a blue, powder blue, you know, four-year-old tuxedo. Made for four-year-olds, not that it was a four-year-old tuxedo. But I had a babysitter that brought that album over, and I would listen to it. And then I found out on the CD there was an extra song, and it got me super excited. And I was like, holy crap, now I need a CD player. This was in the 90s when I figured this out.
Yeah.
But that was probably my favorite album of the 80s. What was the last one? Most memorable moment?
Yeah, you didn't go with favorite athlete yet.
Oh, favorite athlete. Jordan. Hands down.
Oh,
Michael
sure.
Jordan. Scottie Pippen, really close second, just because we share a first name, except I hate being called Scotty.
I call you Scotty.
I used to play basketball in my driveway, and I would be Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen.
At the same time?
Yeah, I sometimes didn't have a lot of friends to play with. Most memorable moment. My most memorable, what is the moment I most remember of the 80s? Halloween in the 80s. I don't know if I can pick a specific one, but I remember a lot of detail from like 80s Halloween parades at school.
Were you wearing the Michael Jackson helmet?
No, I was wearing Michael Jackson helmet. It's my third band name of the episode. No, Ninja Turtles, always. For like the first 10 years of my life. Culturally, Live Aid was probably the biggest moment that I can, you know, muster.
I was the Batman a lot for Halloween in the 80s. Well, you know, like from kindergarten to second
Batman
grade.
Was a good one. Batman was solid.
Yeah.
That Batman 89 movie was killer. The first two Batman movies were so good.
Burton did a good job. He kind of took it back to its roots and just enough homage to the campy 1960s TV show.
Yeah.
It was pretty much just Jack Nicholson trying to be Cesar Romero. And also Jack Nicholson, because let's just face it, Jack Nicholson is just Jack Nicholson in every movie.
I love when an actor doesn't act, they're just awesome people.
Like Robert De Niro?
I feel like that a lot about Tom Cruise, except I hate Tom Cruise. Like, he doesn't necessarily act, he's just always Tom Cruise.
You know how Tom Cruise is awesome? I hate Tom Cruise.
You see what I'm saying, though,
yeah,
right?
Like,
he doesn't portray a character, he just portrays different shades of Tom Cruise.
Robert De Niro does the same thing.
Yeah.
Like they I hurt things. A little bit.
All right. Okay, so that's our lightning round. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to play a little trivia with you guys, okay? We have some user, listener-submitted questions that Brandon and I are going to try to answer. We're going to go head-to-head, and we're going to see who can tally up the most points. And this is going to be a regular feature of the show.
A regular feature of the show.
Thank you, Captain Echo. And, you know, when we tell you what next week's show is going to be about, send us topic trivia on those topics as well and see if who's smarter, me or Brandon.
Oh, we'll, by the way, the thing at the bottom of a sled that's made of metal is called a runner.
That's it. All right, we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Cassandra Fredrickson.
And I'm Norman Mitchell, and we're the hosts of Lord of the Rings Minute, the daily podcast where we discuss, appreciate, and delve too deep into the Lord of the Rings extended editions, one minute at a time.
You know there's a Balrog down there, right?
It'll be fine.
Have you ever wondered about Hobbit economy or how wizards get their mail?
Are you also in awe of Hugo Weaving's eyebrows?
Then join us every Monday through Friday on our mission, quest, thing, only on duelinggenre.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to, what the hell's the name of our show?
Calling BS
with Brandon and Scott. Thanks for hanging out with us. This is our very first show. We had a lot of fun doing this, man.
We did. It's been a pleasure. It's just been a delight.
Look forward to doing a lot of more of these. A lot of more of these. Why am I speaking with A's on the end
That's
of my words?
That's really offensive, Scott.
I'm Italian. I can do it.
It's not appropriate.
It's just stop. So we have our bi-weekly trivia challenge here. Brandon and I are big fans of the bar trivia.
And the living room trivia.
Living room. Anywhere you can ask us questions where we can pretend that we're really smart, we're big fans of them.
And get drunk while we do it.
Usually getting drunk is a key factor. So we have some friends of the show who submitted some questions for us this week on the topic of
masturbation.
Yes. Right or left, Brandon?
Left.
All right. Aren't you right-handed?
Uh-huh.
All right. The old stranger, huh?
Yeah.
So I'm
ambisexual.
On the topic of the 80s, not masturbation. Was masturbation different in the
80s? I mean,
the 1980s
was a very masturbatory decade. It was the era of excess, after all.
That's true. There must have been some sort of pornographic revolution in the 80s.
Everything kind of had a masturbatory oeuvre to it.
Oeuvre is very masturbatory in and of itself.
Yeah.
Oeuvre. Sounds like a terrible perfume.
It's masturbatorily etymological.
Etymological?
Yeah, etymological.
Jesus, wrap your tongue around it.
All right, let's get to the damn question.
All right, so the first question comes from listener Rachel Gatlin. She asks us, name the six members of the Brat Pack. Brandon, what were your answers?
I had John Cryer, Molly Ringwald, Judd Nelson, Demi Moore, Anthony Michael Hall, Ellie Sheedy, and Emilio Estevez. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody obvious.
There's
though.
Definitely more than six of them, right?
Oh, there's absolutely more
okay,
than six.
I got Emilio Estevez, Charlie Sheen, Anthony Michael Hall, Molly Ringwald, Rob Lowe, and Judd Nelson.
Rob Lowe, I think, is considered part of the Brat Pack. I don't know that Charlie Sheen is.
All right. Well, we're going to have the episode or the answers at the end of the episode, so we're going to move on to the next question right now. The next couple come from a listener, Chris O'Connor. Who inspired the character of Gordon Gekko? Now, I remember watching the CNN documentary, The 80s, and I'm kicking myself because there is a dude who is like the insider trading guru of Wall Street who basically sat in court and said, greed is good. And I know, I think that's the guy, but I cannot remember his name. So I just put the insider trading dude.
Michael Milken.
Milken, that's it.
The king of the junk bond. For those playing at home, a junk bond is a high-risk, high-yield security, often set up by corporations to raise capital in a hurry.
Yeah, and was he the same dude that did the whole like savings and loan scandal?
He may have been involved in that. He had his hands in a lot of dirty pots.
That CNN 80s, those decade documentaries are awesome.
Yeah,
if you haven't watched them yet.
A lot of dirty pool going on with that guy.
Yeah. All right, so that one I obviously didn't get right. Excuse me. Who sold the most records from 1980 to 1989?
I mean, I just went with my gut instinct and threw Jack Nicholson in the ring.
Jack Nicholson, that's a pretty solid guess. I went with Michael Jackson, actually.
Who's he?
It's just some guy. He's indie, you know.
He's Indian?
Underground artist. No, it's not Indian. It's independent. No.
Imagine.
Who shot Reagan?
It's a disturbed young man named John Hinckley Jr.
I also had John Hinckley, but I did not put the Jr. All right.
He did so in order to impress a young college student and actress at the time, Jodie Foster, who had spurned his previous advances. And actually, I think was in the process of setting up a restraining order against him because he was stalking her. So he thought, I'll go out and shoot the president. That'll impress her.
All right, Brandon. Who was Time's Man of the Decade for the 1980s? This question comes from listener and friend, Will Propestis.
Ah, Will. One of my favorite people.
Who I think is going to be a guest on our show coming up soon.
I hope so.
Possibly next week. I have to look at the schedule. We'll let you know.
So my guess...
Man of the Decade, 80s.
It's usually someone of a nefarious sort. I went with Mikhail Gorbachev. I thought he was a pretty solid lead here. With the whole glasnost and perestroika, economic recovery in the Soviet Union, he was really one of the first guys to capitalize basically the socialist regime and the communist bloc, and I think tried his best to keep the country afloat while it was on life support, and also oversaw the fall of the Berlin Wall and ultimately the end of the Cold War, and worked closely with Ronald Reagan in doing so.
I just went ahead and said Reagan. I figured that he was president for pretty much the entire decade up until the tail end of it.
Yeah.
Though one might
January 20th, 1981 to January 20th, 1989.
That the last chunk of time, depending on when Time magazine was published and when they declared Man of the Decade, Bush being president for the last little bit of 89 might sort of pull focus away from Reagan as far as
that. Yeah.
But they could also put him in rose-colored glasses. So my guess was Ronald Reagan.
Sticking with Gorby.
All right. Well, you're not allowed to change your answer anyway.
All right.
All right. So the last question for the week, we did six of them. They're each worth 100 points. We'll go through and do the scoring. We're going to figure out, Brandon, just who's smarter, you or me. Last question comes from friend Greg Clark, not to be confused with actor Clark Gregg. Greg Clark asks, of the first overall picks in the NBA draft, 1980 through 1989, five are now enshrined in the Hall of Fame. Who are they? And he even gave us a hint. Only one went in as an Eastern Conference player. Now, this is a great question, but I know that you know sports way more than I do, so I fully anticipate losing this one.
However, no pun intended, the NBA is kind of my weakest arena. More of a baseball and football guy. But I would have, obviously, Jordan. I had Stockton, Barkley, Ewing. And I just went with it. I put down Larry Bird because I couldn't, for the life of me, remember if he was drafted in the late 70s or
man,
the 80s.
I see. I felt like Bird was a 70s guy. I think we had a lot of the same answers. I put Jordan. I got David Robinson.
That's a good one.
From the Spurs. Charles Barkley, Stockton, and Malone.
Oh, Malone. That's a good answer.
So those are my answers. So now let's go back and take a look. All right, Brat Pack. Actors in the Brat Pack. The list reads as follow: Emilio Estevez, Anthony Michael Hall, Rob Lowe, Andrew McCarthy, Demi Moore, Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald, and Ally Sheedy. So I got Estevez. You got Estevez?
I got Estevez.
Charlie Sheen, I put, he is not an official member. I'm just looking at Wikipedia.
The
right
wikiest
now.
Of the
so
PDs.
I missed Charlie Sheen. Anthony Michael Hall.
I got everything I put down was correct except for John Cryer.
Did you get six?
I got six. I got Ringwald, Nelson, Moore, Hall, Sheedy, and Estevez.
I got five. So Brandon, you get 100 points for that one. I get zero. I feel like we're going all or nothing here. All right.
I dig it.
Damn you, Charlie Sheen. Is
damn
not the first
dirty
time
Sheen.
That was ever uttered. Who inspired the character of Gordon Gekko? Once again, Brandon with 100 points.
You want to confirm that?
Ah, oh, we can confirm that.
Just
what was
for
his name?
The sake of posterior.
Gekko?
Michael Milken, I think his name
Gordon
was.
Gekko was partly Milken. All right, according to Wikipedia. That's it. Boom.
Fantastic.
Originally, there was no one individual who Gekko was modeled on, but Gekko was partly Milken. I think that's
so
a fair answer.
So if you wrote
answer.
Down nothing, you would have gotten it correct.
I guess you could call that a subjective question.
I suppose.
The next question on the list was... yeah. The most records sold from 1980... to 1989.
I mean, how could the guy who made Thriller not hold this particular mantle?
One would assume that it's gotta be.
I mean, who else would it be besides maybe Madonna?
That's a good one. But neither of us guessed Madonna. That would have been a good
guess. I put Jack
Michelson.
I'm going to stick with it.
It should come as no surprise to see the King of Pop at the top of the list of best-selling artists of the 80s.
Ooh, rounding out the
top
five.
He practically owned the 80s with an astounding 9 number one songs. Man who revolutionized pop music with songs like Thriller and Billie Jean started his decade of domination with Rock With You. So this is according to MadeMan.com.
And rounding out the top five, we've got Jack Michelson at number one, a little-known drummer by the name of Phil Collins at number two, the late Whitney Houston at number three, the regrettable Madonna at number four, and the always sterling Hall & Oates at number five.
Yeah, that's a hell of a murderer's row in the top 10 here. George Michael at six, Lionel Richie at seven, Bon Jovi at eight, Prince at nine, Stevie Wonder at 10. 80s were good, man.
Yeah, not a whole lot of my favorite artists in that list.
Yeah, but you can't dispute the quality.
I can't dispute
Bon Jovi, you can dispute.
I can't dispute their commercial appeal, that's for sure. I can dispute their Brandon Warren appeal.
That's true. Everyone's got an opinion, and you are entitled to it. So we're going to go Michael Jackson on that one. So I'm on the board.
All right.
And you're killing me. You're 200 points over me right now.
I am holding my lead.
You got this, I think. I think this might be your week. Who shot Reagan? We're both right. John Hinckley. That's another 100 points for each of us. Who was Time's Man of the Decade? And, oh, you son of a bitch. Brandon, you son of a bitch. Mikhail Gorbachev for the win. January 1, 1990, man of the decade in time, Mikhail Gorbachev.
First man on the moon.
Oh, God. Mikhail Gorbachev wins the World Series.
Mr. Gorbachev won the World Series.
Mikhail Gorbachev directs Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Navy.
What? Wait, the one with...
Is that the one with Kelsey Grammer? No, that's Down Periscope.
Mikhail's Navy was...
Tim Curry, right?
No, it's Roseanne Barr. What the hell
Tom
was this?
Arnold.
Tom Arnold.
Wasn't Tim Curry also in that, Mikhail's Navy?
He might... Yes?
I feel like he
Listen,
was.
Listen, he's either the bad guy in Down Periscope, the bad guy in Mikhail's... Oh, no, was he the chef?
Was he
a member of the crew?
How can we not get the submarine movies from the 90s straight?
Sergeant Bilko?
I think we need to stick to one branch in the military.
Oh, man. All right.
Sergeant Bilko with Steve Martin and...
Dick Sergeant, Dick York.
And Phil Hartman.
Sergeant York.
All right, the NBA question.
The NBA, oh, Jesus. Well, you already beat me handily, but now I'm curious.
For the listeners at home, what's the answer?
The answer to this one. So here it is. Here's the answer. All right. We were both way off, dude.
Yes.
We were both very wrong on this one. So, first overall picks in the Hall of Fame starting 1982. Played for the Lakers, James Worthy. Already, we're both out on this one.
Yes.
All right.
We're not worthy. Like most of my answers, they are not worthy.
Houston Rockets, Ralph Sampson.
Yep.
You know who that is?
I can't say that
I do. Having a clue. He's a center. Also on the Rockets in 84, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Now, this one in particular kills me because I came so close to writing Olajuwon down. And something told me not to. And then
85, the year of our birth, Mr. Patrick Ewing.
Yeah, Ewing we got.
And I didn't get Ewing. You got Ewing, right?
I got Ewing, yes.
All right. And I got the next one, 87, David Robinson. So... We both get zero on that.
And surprisingly, in the 1984 draft, Jordan was taken third overall.
That's unbelievable.
I had no idea.
That's insane. So, Brandon, you rack up a solid 500 points for this week to start off.
Yes.
I'm sitting at a lousy 200. Bull. And I have to redeem myself next week. So, our next show is going to be the Beach Boys show.
Yes.
So, send us trivia questions about the Beach Boys, about surf music.
About cars in the 60s.
There you go, 60s cars, surf culture, anything Beach Boys-y. You could send us Charles Manson questions if you want to.
Anything about Brian Wilson after the 60s, too.
Yeah, and I have a feeling you're probably just going to wallop on me again next week.
Maybe. I might also beat you in the questions as well.
Yeah, well, that was disappointing. But that's how we play that game. So that brings us kind of to the end of our show here, Brandon.
So I think at the end of the show, what we wanted to do was discuss our songs of the week. And since the theme this week was...
Of the bi-week. We're a bi-weekly show. So it's the songs of the bi-week.
Every week is our bi-week, which means we'll never do a show.
So what's our song of the show, song of the week? What do you want?
So I have two songs. And
that's appropriate because we're every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks.
I should have just shut up at the begin with.
The point is, I have two songs, and I went pretty deep to the well for this one. I didn't want to go ahead and choose like Men Without Hats or Huey Lewis in the News or
Though both
Genesis.
Would have been respectable, and I love all of those bands.
I went with The Mayor of Simpleton, which came out in 1989 by XTC.
That's a great song.
It is. I also went with No Easy Way Out by Robert Tepper, which I think is probably the most underrated song from 1985's Rocky IV. A lot of credence is given to...
Oh, I know that song.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell is that one? Okay.
Everyone thinks about Hearts on Fire or Burning Heart or Living in America, but No Easy Way Out
That's
often
a
gets
solid
forgotten.
Song. Let me tell you about XTC. This is another one of those bands, just like The Cure, that I am, you know... just now really starting to wrap my head around. I am familiar with them, but it's become one of those bands where it's like, Jesus, I really want to listen to some XTC right
They're
now.
They're super new wavy.
That's what I'm all about at this point in time is new wave music. Man, go out and check out those songs. So Mayor of Simpleton, XTC, No Easy Way Out by
Robert Tepper.
Go take a listen to those. Visit duelinggenre.com for all the cool podcasts over there. It's where you can find us. Subscribe to us on a regular basis. You can get us wherever you get your podcasts. You get great podcasts like Back to the Future Minute, Lord of the Rings Minute, lots of other movie by minute shows. You get some great audio drama in Geek by Night over there, which I work on. You can subscribe to our Patreon if you want to send a little bit of money towards Dueling Genre and help fund the podcast that we put out over there.
Send us your money.
Send us your money. All your money. You get some cool little treats if you do subscribe to that, and it makes sure that this content can keep coming at you.
And whoever donates the most money will get an authentic Calling BS t-shirt drawn by me on a plain white Hanes tee.
With a Sharpie.
Yes.
We're going to hold you to that now.
I will. I will personally make you a t-shirt if you send us a lot of money.
We'll put a dollar amount on that at some point, okay?
Nope, it's completely subjective and arbitrary. Only I will determine what's a lot of money, and then I will draw on your t-shirt.
It's like the...
I'm going to send
what a crapshoot that is.
I'm going to send you an ill-fitting Hanes t-shirt that probably
they don't even get to pick the size?
That was probably not made this decade.
Oh, man. Is it a used Hanes t-shirt?
That's kind of what I was driving
at. Oh, man. All right. Authentic.
So if you like that...
Pre-worn... show merchandise. Oh man,
I didn't
Brandon.
Say it was pre-worn, I said it was used.
Jesus Christ. Well, I think that brings us to the end. This is a lot of fun. We'll see you in a couple weeks for the Beach Boys show, and I think we're gonna have a special guest on that one. Thanks for hanging out with us, Brandon. Final thoughts.
Take care, folks.
All right, bye.
BS,
everybody,
I love you.
Bye.